Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in the next two half-hour segments, we're going to take a look at fascism and specifically Nazism's relatively successful attempts to use things that are not fascist, let alone Nazi, and use them in such a way as to promote a fascist viewpoint. In terms of history, this is known as revisionism, and there is in fact a wholesale revisionist effort going on, not only in the United States but around the world, to legitimize fascism and Nazism and to rehabilitate the reputation of the Third Reich. The focal point of much of this revisionism is a corporatist strategy that not only the Third Reich, but its successor, the Underground Reich, which controls not only contemporary Germany, but a disturbingly large portion of the United States, that Underground Reich has utilized a corporatist concept of conquest, in which instead of sending armies and air fleets and tanks crashing across an opponent's borders or a would-be subject nation's borders, instead economic and corporate power are utilized to change hearts and minds in such a way as to effect conquest. And what we're going to be doing in these two half-hour segments is to take a look at how fascism and Nazism is utilizing hearts and minds and attempting to win those hearts and minds over to its sympathies. We're going to begin by taking a look at a very short blurb from the New York Times of Thursday, September 30th of 1999. This is a story about Poland. It's by Roger Cohen of the New York Times. It's entitled, "Poland's Glossy Capitalism Displays a Darker Underside." And I'm going to read this article simply because it has a quote from a Polish nationalist and activist that I think will represent a very good jumping-off point for the bulk of the discussion. The fellow in question here is a fellow named Leper, and specifically his name is Andrzej Leper, A-N-D-R-E-J, and he is quoted in the New York Times of September 30th of 1999 as follows. "The rights of our people are being trampled," unquote, Mr. Leper said, sitting beneath a crucifix and a banner saying Poles will defend what is theirs. Quote, "Our industry and land are being sold off, much of it to Germans. I often say that what Hitler failed to do by murdering millions is today being achieved by economic means." Amen, and that is in many ways a thesis statement for the program. What Hitler did not achieve through killing millions is now being achieved using economic means and, beyond that, cultural seduction. Veteran listeners to the program can probably guess what I'm going to be introducing next. Many people are familiar with the Nazi publisher National Vanguard Books, or if not that publisher, its best-known product, which is a book called The Turner Diaries. That book was authored by the head of the National Alliance, the most important domestic Nazi group. That's a guy named William Pierce. And The Turner Diaries has served as a blueprint, a role model, not only for Timothy McVeigh and company, and McVeigh was only one of a larger group involved in Oklahoma City, and it was also the blueprint and the Bible, so to speak, for the Nazi group The Order in the 1980s. They have published a number of books. In addition to The Turner Diary, a book called Hunter, about a Nazi killer who goes around dispatching people of color and interracial couples in particular. They also put out a book that I've been talking about for quite some time called Serpent's Walk. That book is authored by Randolph O. Calverhall, or Randolph D. Calverhall, I guess it is. That's a pen name. And what the book is about a Nazi takeover of the United States in the mid-21st century by the descendants of the SS who go into economics, so to speak. They leave the military battlefield for the economic battlefield. They put together an underground flight capital organization, buy into the American opinion-forming media, infiltrate the army, and then, after a biological warfare attack using genetically engineered viruses of ostensibly Russian origin, which wipes out much of the population on both coasts in the United States and much of the urban population, and the president and vice president of the United States, the Speaker of the House, who is a Nazi ally, then invites the Nazis into a governing coalition, and they take over the world. The back of the book, as I've said before, I think that Serpent's Walk is, like the Turner Diaries, a blueprint for what the Underground Reich plans on doing and is doing. And in my opinion, the single most important aspect of this is the flight capital organization that buys into the American opinion-forming media. We are seeing that, yea, verily, even as I speak. The back cover of Serpent's Walk reads as follows. "The good guys win sometimes. Not always, of course. They lost big in the Second World War. That war was a victory for communists, Democrats, and Jews, but everyone else lost, including millions of GIs, who were told that they were killing Germans and Japanese in order to make the world a decent place for their children to grow up, only to see things in America go from bad to much, much worse in the decades after the war. Even when the bad guys win, they sometimes grow careless and later become losers. Look what happened to the communists of Eastern Europe in the 1990s. Could the same thing happen to their erstwhile World War II allies in America? Serpent's Walk explores that possibility. It assumes that Hitler's warrior elite, the SS, didn't give up their struggle for a white world when they lost the Second World War. I would interject, they most assuredly didn't, and the next sentence is true as well. Instead, their survivors went underground and adopted some of the tactics of their enemies. They began building their economic muscle and buying into the opinion-forming media. A century after the war, they are ready to challenge the Democrats and Jews for the hearts and minds of white Americans who have begun to have their fill of government-enforced multiculturalism and, quote, equality, unquote. Well, as we've seen in numerous discussions of the Bormann Flight Capital Organization, the remarkable and deadly Bormann group that is the economic component of a Third Reich gone underground, the Bormann group is one of the dominant elements, power elements in the world today, although largely unrecognized. Paul Manning, the famous, well, not so much famous as the brilliant and heroic journalist, who worked with Edward R. Murrow in the CBS News team that covered World War II for the CBS radio network in World War II, Paul Manning has written the definitive book about the Bormann Group. It's a book that I've accessed in numerous broadcasts called Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. And in For the Record segment 145, in which I accessed some of the correspondence between Paul Manning and his professional colleagues, a banker was quoted as describing the Bormann Organization as, quote, the single most important concentration of money power under a single control in all of world history. And that is true. The Bormann Group, which is widely believed to have assumed the Hermann Schmitz Trust, has as much capital participation in Standard Oil as the Rockefellers, something most Americans don't know. Beyond that, as I pointed out in the past, the Bormann Group, which controls corporate Germany or the major German corporations, is different from most other corporations in a number of corporate entities in many different respects. First of all, the German core corporations are forbidden by German law from allowing any foreign interest to own a controlling share in those corporations. That, of course, is very different from American and other countries, some huge multinational corporations, many of which, such as Daimler, Chrysler, are now controlled by German corporations. The same thing cannot take place in Germany, where the core corporations are forbidden by German law from allowing a foreign interest to own a controlling share. Beyond that, whereas American-based multinationals operate in a limited and, to a certain extent, anarchic political context, the German core corporations and the various corporations controlled by the Bormann Group, not only the corporations in the Third World, but also the German core corporations, operate in concert. They operate the way the NATO air arm, for example, in the bombing of Yugoslavia in 1999, functioned in a coordinated fashion to take out the various aspects of the Yugoslavian infrastructure. Transportation, energy, media, all of the various aspects of Yugoslavian culture and society were systematically taken out by the NATO terror bombing. The Bormann Group and the German core corporations affiliated with it operate in an analogous fashion, only instead of dropping bombs, they act as a coordinated entity to gain control of a society. One German energy corporation, for example, would get control of one aspect of a country's, say Poland's, for example, energy industry or energy industries. Another German corporation would gain control of another aspect of Polish energy producers. Another element of corporate Germany and the Bormann Group would gain control of Polish media, and that is how those things work. The corporations and the German core corporations and the various corporations in Third World that together comprise the Bormann Organization operate in concert in an organized and military fashion to gain control of a targeted entity. And in connection with the United States, or in the context of the United States, one should consider the Serpent's Walk scenario. In For the Record segments 122 and 123, and also in follow-up broadcasts For the Record or FTR segment 135 and number 152, I've talked about the German corporate control of American publishing. American publishing is arguably the most important of the opinion-forming media, and note on the back of Serpent's Walk, speaking of the SS, instead, their survivors went underground and adopted some of the tactics of their enemies. They began building their economic muscle and buying into the opinion-forming media. Publishing is one of the most important of the opinion-forming media because that is what will inform educated Americans about the world, and what educated Americans are going to know about the world is going to come from German corporations affiliated with the Bormann Group and with outright links going back to the Third Reich, overt links, I should say, going back to the Third Reich. The largest corporation involved with American publishing is the Bertelsmann Corporation. That company was founded by Heinrich Mohn, who is SS. They are the largest single English language publisher. They already owned Doubleday Dell when they gained control of Random House Incorporated in 1998. Random House Incorporated in 1997, the previous year, had more than double the sales volume of any other English language publisher. And this is now added to the Bertelsmann holdings in American publishing, and they've added others since. In addition, the von Holtzbrinck firm, whose founder joined the Nazi Party in 1931, and a company that was noted for employing Nazi Party members who were forbidden employment in other aspects of German industry in post-war Germany. The von Holtzbrinck firm also controls huge amounts of the American publishing industry, and I would note that Michael Naumann, the German culture minister, had previously headed up Henry Holton Company for von Holtzbrinck. Again, in understanding not only the German, in understanding corporate Germany and the Bormann Organization, one should understand that those corporations operate in conjunction as part of an organized quasi-military or strategic phalanx. I would also point out that whereas American corporations do get involved in politics in order to obtain not only the corporate welfare that's fairly well publicized, although not as publicized as it should be, they also get involved in politics in order to hold down labor costs and environmental regulations. They will also from time to time get involved with national security activities in order to promote their situation abroad. But they do not act as part of an organized strategic whole, with the exception of the fact that they work together to achieve those general aims. And this is very different from corporate Germany and the Bormann Organization. Beyond that, the Bormann Organization is literally a Third Reich gone underground, and a portion of the capital that is generated by corporate Germany and by the various corporate fronts of the Bormann Group goes to fund Nazi activities around the world. In Serpent's Walk, the goals of the Underground Reich are described in a conversation between two members of the Underground Reich, one an American mercenary named Lessing and another part of the Nazi faithful, or a member of the Nazi faithful called Wrench. And in a passage that I've read before, but I think I'm going to read again because it'll serve as a good jumping-off point, we read as follows. Wrench says, "The SS, what was left of it, had business objectives before and during World War II. When the war was lost, they just kept on, but from other places, Bogota, Asunción, Buenos Aires, Rio de Janeiro, Mexico City, Colombo, Damascus, Dakar, you name it. They realized that the world is heading towards a corporocracy, 5 or 10 international super companies that will run everything worth running by the year 2100. Those super corporations exist now, and they're already dividing up the production and marketing of food, transport, steel and heavy industry, oil, the media, and other commodities. They're mostly conglomerates with fingers in more than one pie. Skipping down, we, the SS, have the say in 4 or 5. We've been competing for the past 60 years or so, and we're slowly gaining. Lose the war, win the peace. Which ones do you button down Nazis own? Lessing was interested in spite of himself, and skipping down, I'll give you an example, one I saw myself. About 10 years ago, we swung a merger, a takeover, and got voting control of a super corporation that runs a small but significant chunk of the American media. Not openly, with bands and trumpets or swastikas flying, but quietly. One huge corporation cuddling up to another one and gently munching it up like a great gubbing amoeba. Since then, we've been replacing executives, pushing somebody out here, bringing somebody else in there. We've swung program content around, too. Not much, but a little, so it won't show. We've cut down on nasty Nazi movies, good guys in white hats and bad guys in black SS hats, lovable Jews versus fiendish Germans, and we have media psychologists, ad agencies, and behavior modification specialists working on image changes, and then less encounters. How in hell do you expect me to believe this? And he's talking about the Holocaust, and then Wrench goes on to deny that the Holocaust ever happened. And less encounters, you'll never convince enough people to matter. And then Wrench counters in turn, give it time. Aside from the media, we've been buying up private schools and helping some public ones through philanthropic foundations and working on the churches and the born-agains. And I would note in this regard the push towards public funding of private schools. George W., himself no intellectual giant, is one of the people that advocates that. That is something people should pay close attention to in this context. But the hearts and minds scenario, that was a term that was floated during the Vietnam War. The American war goal in Vietnam was stated as winning hearts and minds, something we failed to do. Hearts and minds basically is the goal of the revisionist history and the cultural propaganda that is coming from the underground Reich and is making certainly a concerted attempt, perhaps at least to an extent partially successful attempt at rehabilitating the reputation of the Third Reich. And I want to stress that the various avenues of approach that are going to be discussed for the rest of the program should not be condemned as in and of themselves fascist, but rather the underground Reich and fascist and Nazi elements around the world are utilizing various avenues of approach the way an invading army would use a bridge over a river to send tanks in. And one should be very careful not to condemn the avenues of approach themselves as fascist or Nazi, but nonetheless, very many avenues are being utilized, and I think a great deal of care has to be taken. One of the many companies, one of the many areas in which I see revisionism taking place is in the area of film. There was a film that achieved a fair amount of publicity called 7 Years in Tibet. It was about a Nazi, specifically an SS man named Heinrich Harrer, who was the tutor for the Dalai Lama in his youth. Harrer was also an expert mountain climber and had joined the Austrian SA in 1933. Despite his disclaimers to the contrary, he was obviously a devout Nazi, having joined the Austrian SA a full 5 years before the Anschluss, the annexation of Austria, and he later joined the SS. I would note that the portrayal of this SS man not only doesn't mention that he's an SS, but the character played by Brad Pitt actually goes out of his way to try to express opposition to Nazism. That didn't take place in the SS, and I would take note of the movie 7 Years in Tibet as part of this revisionism and as part of this attempt at altering the historical reality of the Third Reich. Another film has just been released in Germany about Josef Mengele, the infamous Auschwitz doctor, that appears to be engaging in a similar type of revisionism and an attempt at portraying Mengele in such a way as to actually promote what he did and to exonerate his wrongdoing. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience in the L.A. area. This comes from Studio Briefing, edited by Lou Irwin, and this can be located on the web at newsshare.com. Once again, NewsShare, NEWSHARE.com. It's dated Thursday, September 23rd of 1999. This is entitled, German Death Camp Film Ignites Controversy, and again, a tip of the hat to a member of the listening audience. The German film Nothing But the Truth, which examines the crimes of the notorious death camp doctor Josef Mengele, is already becoming a lightning rod for controversy as it opens in German theaters today. Today's London Times observes, quote, "The story, although aimed at condemning Mengele in his own words, actually gives voice to the unspeakable. Fritz George plays Mengele not as a sadist but as a medical researcher whose passion for science binds him to the enormity of his crimes," unquote. Mengele, who, according to the story, is discovered living in South America and is pursued to return to Germany to stand trial, declares at one point, quote, "I am innocent. Of course I killed. For the benefit of mankind. The best doctors kill. Have to kill every day. Today they take rats, mice, and monkeys and lose valuable time. In the past, we did not lose time," unquote. He is then made to face some of his crippled victims. In Spain, a critic for El País called the film, quote, "nothing but a lie," unquote. Indeed, but I would note, too, that this is part of a broad-based attempt to rehabilitate the reputation of the Third Reich, and I would note in this regard that the Third Reich was not an accident or an isolated entity, and that much of the responsibility for the crimes of Nazism comes from the West, and specifically elements who were pro-fascist or outright fascist themselves within the American and British industrial and financial sectors, and also the eugenics thinkers in both countries who wielded a profound influence on Nazism. And Josef Mengele comes from the eugenics sector, an international school of thought that was very sympathetic to Hitler and which profoundly influenced Nazism. I would note in this regard that right here in the United States, we're seeing a presidential candidate, not only a presidential candidate, but someone who worked for the Nixon White House and later became the communications director for Ronald Reagan's White House. That's a fellow named Pat Buchanan. As I've noted on this program in the past, the fellow who was selected to succeed Pat Buchanan then later had to resign when it came out that he had served in the Hitler Youth in Germany. Pat Buchanan has been garnering quite a few headlines, and bear in mind that this is a guy who worked for the Reagan White House. Pat Buchanan has been garnering quite a few headlines for his touting of revisionist history, and now we are seeing Pat Buchanan's quasi-pro-Hitler stance being echoed by people who ought to know better. This comes from the San Jose Mercury News op-ed page of Wednesday, September 29th of 1999. This is a column by Richard Cohen, who is a syndicated columnist for the Washington Post, and it's headlined, "Bashed for the Wrong Reason. Flawed Buchanan May Be Right on World War II." The column reads in part, "Forgive me, but I am starting to feel sorry for Pat Buchanan. Here, the guy has been saying the ugliest things all these years to little more than nods from his fellow Republicans. Then he propounds a theory about World War II that is not as crazy as it sounds, and he is virtually drummed out of the GOP. Clearly, you can insult Jews, gays, blacks, Hispanics, immigrants, and common sense itself, but question America's role in World War II and you're sentenced to life listening to Ross Perot. Solitary would be better. What brings on this cruel and unusual punishment? The supposed offense is Buchanan's theory that as late as 1940, Hitler represented no threat to the United States." Skipping down, He is merely saying that this maybe was a war that did not have to be fought. Well, I would note, as anyone who studied the Third Reich knows, Hitler had planned conquest of America early on. It's just that he was going to take every country in turn. And I would note again that Pat Buchanan was the communications director for the Reagan White House, and there's an entire branch of the Republican Party, the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization, that is literally a Nazi branch of the Republican Party with its roots firmly planted in the Third Reich. I've discussed that in numerous broadcasts available from Spitfire, including a four-part interview with John Loftus, and a couple of different half-hour segments dealing with a miscellaneous archive show entitled Nazis and Anti-Semites on the George Bush Campaign, and then later in a half-hour segment done just before the 1998 elections, reprising some of the information about the Underground Reich and its connections to the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization. It's also discussed at considerable length in RFA 37. So note again, not only that Pat Buchanan is saying, well, we didn't have to fight World War II, I should expect nothing less from someone from the Reagan White House, but now we're having syndicated columnists writing for the Washington Post saying, yeah, you know, that part of what Buchanan's saying isn't so bad. This is part of the revisionism that we're seeing, and it's something that people have to pay very, very close attention to. Not only do we have to pay close attention to the opinion-forming media, as they're referred to in the book Serpent's Walk, film, records, books, and other forms of cultural information, but one should pay very close attention to the Pat Buchanans and others who are basically floating cultural and political trial balloons that are obviously revisionist in nature and pro-fascist and pro-Nazi. We're going to deal with this theme in the next half-hour segment as well. I've made reference during the course of this half-hour segment to Spitfire. That's a tape duplication service that stocks the various tapes that I've done over the years. Spitfire can be found at be found by regular mail at P.O. Box 1179. That's P.O. Box 1179. That's in Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. The email address for Spitfire is spitfire@ix.netcom.com. That's spitfire@ix.netcom.com. There are lists of and descriptions of the various tapes available from Spitfire on both the Spitfire website and the KFJC website. The Spitfire website is spitfirelist.com, one word, Spitfirelist, SPITFIRELIST.com, and the KFJC website is at kfjc.org. The KFJC website also has a suggested reading list, about 5 years out of date now, but it will be updated at some point. And the Spitfire website is equipped with real audio so that you can listen to the half-hour segments going out to the various stations that carry this program on the Spitfire website. KFJC is also equipped with internet audio capability, and you can listen to the weekly One Step Beyond show that I do on KFJC FM from 7 to 10 Pacific time on Sunday night, and 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific time on Thursday night. That website, again, is kfjc.org. You can also email me at demory@kfjc.org. Once again, demory@kfjc.org. I get a small royalty from the sale of the archive shows only. I get no monies from recent, present, or future on-air endeavors. We're going to continue with our examination of Nazism and fascism's attempts at winning hearts and minds and using avenues of approach that one might not necessarily expect, but we're going to do that in our next program. That concludes this half-hour segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening, and good night.